God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anybody here tonight in your first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you. Nobody's going to interview you. You can unmute yourself and say hello if you wish. First 30 days. Hey, Perry. Preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous says that Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So the format of this meeting is an open speaker ask it basket. Tonight, we are very excited to have Amy F. from Glendale, California, come and tell her story. After she does that, we'll take a short break near the top of the hour, pass the seven tradition basket, maybe have time for an announcement or two. But you're going to see, do you see? Yes, there is a user called Questions. And it's really Larry. Did I co-host you, Larry? I did not. Let me do that now. So sorry about that. So Larry is the user Questions. And so as questions occur to you, please use the chat function to the user Questions and submit them. Larry will wrangle them all up. After we take a short break, then we'll come back and we'll ask Amy the questions. Am I over-explaining that? Yes, David. Okay, so I'm just super excited to have Amy come and share tonight. She was highly recommended, and I don't want to take up another minute of her time. Welcome, Amy. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Amy. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, David. I highly recommended probably my sponsor, Carla. Huh? I don't know. I stopped asking a long time ago. But thank you for inviting me. I'm so glad stuff is starting to open up here in California. And you know, like a good alcoholic, I'm like, you know, I was freaked out when it changed the first time. And I'm like freaked out that it's, you know, changing again, because it's like but I think there's going to be a good mix of both, you know, because for some reason I don't like want to have to, you know, ever wear shoes again to a meeting, and Zoom really helps that. But thank you, David, for God, you know, I just thank God for people like David, because if it were up to me, I would never get outside of myself, you know, to even like think or try to be of service or carry this message. I still hate that about, I hate that about myself still, because it's, you know, it's like, why, I don't know. One of my favorite speakers, used to say, if you're going to be a good AA, you're going to be inconvenienced. And I kind of held that one, because it's like, why do I always feel inconvenienced? Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. Part of that bargain, you know, God gave me this beautiful gift, and to uphold, you know, my side of that, it's like, I got to suit up and show up and give it away, you know, and God, because I don't look for those opportunities on my own, I really believe that God is taking care of me and putting people like David and my sponsor, you know, in my life. And if I've learned one thing in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's that I say yes, you know, I just say yes. That's like that contrary action that I learned at the very beginning. So thank you. And my sobriety date is November 15th, 2002. I don't like when there's no like shares before me, but I'm glad I came in a little bit before. Little identification, Debbie, these are also my favorite. So I'm going to take a sip now. Yes, I also love Talladega Nights. Step Brothers is like my favorite though. Make sure to watch that like every few months. Or at least just the, you know, Sweet Child of Mine, like a cappella car singing scene. It makes my, gives me joy. You know, I look for joy where I can. So anyway, I'm going to look at my phone because I am one of those people that will just go on and on and on until like the cane and the music like play me off. But I do, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love talking about it. It's number one. It's everything in my life. And I've had a good AA day today. You know, I have a regular Sunday morning meeting on Zoom. It's a small group of women. I've never met most of the women in person because it started on Zoom, and I absolutely love it and I never miss it. And I wake up early on Sunday so that I can be there, you know? And then my sponsor has a quarterly, she sponsors a lot of women. She's amazing, Carla Rao. I'm sure she, you know, many of you have heard her probably, but she has these mandatory sponsee meetings. They're quarterly, and we used to meet at her house, and we've been meeting on Zoom. And so I did one of those today, and just like everything else in my life that helps to keep me sober and that feeds my spiritual growth, I never want to go. And I always have contempt prior to investigation. And I always get so much out of it. And I'm grateful again for those early tools of, it doesn't matter if I don't want to go. It doesn't, just bring the body and the mind will follow, you know. And I got sober in a place where they physically took us, you know, to meetings. And they, you know, told us, you know, go wash those cups, go, you know, stack those chairs. Like they, you know, and I could follow direction. That's one thing I could do when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. So thank God for that. And I still, you know, I still do that. I show up because if I say that I'm grateful for her sponsorship, with which I am, then I will be there, you know, when she asked me to be there. And guess what? You know, today it was like, her friend who founded the AA archives in Akron, Ohio, gave a presentation on the history of women in AA. And I was, you know, being snotty and texting my husband like, oh, I'm going to AA school. I'm going to get my degree in AA today. And then it's like, it was amazing. And I learned so much. And I got this, I found some, you know, gratitude for the women who I, you know, maybe some I'd heard of in passing, you know, but understand now that that I get to stand on their shoulders, you know, and that they didn't have the opportunities that I had when I came into AA. You know, I wasn't shunned for being a fallen woman, you know, like they were, you know, and thank God for their courage and their tenacity. You know, and that's why I love my sponsor, you know, because I'm just like, boring. I want to watch basketball, you know, which actually today it works out because it's only 4 o'clock here and the game doesn't start for another hour and a half. So yay. See, I can talk for an hour because it takes me like 25 minutes to just get to my story. So I grew up in West LA. I'm the only alcoholic in my family that I know of. My parents are extremely loving, generous people. I didn't really understand that, or I didn't know that until I had, until I had done some work in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I really think until I had gotten into that inventory and learned how to start living this way of life, you know, like well past those amends. If you would have asked me when I got here and long before, I would have blamed everything that was wrong with me in my life on my parents, you know, and I hated my life. And I can say, you know, today from where I sit that that I was, you know, nothing was wrong, you know, that I had a lot of opportunity and I had a lot of love, you know, and my parents taught me really well. And that, you know, I could see, you know, the things that I, you know, and I wasn't aware of any of this until I had done some, you know, work in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, where these resentments came from. But I'm grateful for having stuck around long enough to see that, you know, and my relationship with my parents is, it's beyond amazing today, you know, and that's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. But, you know, so I grew up in West LA, went to a private French school. I didn't know, you know, that any of these were gifts when I was, you know, receiving them. I just, was super focused on like what we didn't have, what other people had, you know, what my friends' parents were letting them do. I mean, all the way up to, you know, high school, we moved to the Valley, the San Fernando Valley when I was 11. And then I went to a private, you know, Catholic school out there. And I remember when I was 16, all my friends were getting like BMWs and Jeep Wranglers and what was the other big one back then? Like Corvettes and stuff like that. And when I was 16, my parents bought me a brand new car. It was a Honda Civic. It had the balloons and the bows and all that stuff. And I was just like, ew, you know, like, I wasn't a Beamer and I wasn't a Jeep. And I couldn't, you know, as somebody who, is self-supporting today and has children, you know, and has, you know, worked hard to send those kids to preschool and, you know, realizes how much everything costs, you know, after school care, extracurricular stuff, so that they, you know, so we can encourage them to do the things that they're interested in and want to do. I couldn't imagine. I can't even buy my own car today. You know, I'm 18 years sober and I'm grateful that I have relatives, you know, who let us like take over their leases when they get new cars. You know, I'm grateful for that. I don't live in a house, you know, like I rent a little apartment in Glendale. And I love it because there's off-street parking, you know. I've learned through what life has given me, you know, and those lessons that I've needed to learn in sobriety to be grateful for what I have. And it's been a long journey, you know, and it's been pretty painful and pretty rocky because I started from a very low place. You know, sometimes, especially this last year, you know, with the challenges, my biggest challenge, this whole last year and a half has been, I'm grateful to have a job that I've kept, you know, I can work from home, but I've got a fourth grader and a first grader. And my first grader really like tested me, you know, and our relationship, was something that I had to work through. And I learned that I'm not a good teacher and I've had to work with my sponsor very hard this year on patience and communication. And it was hard. I don't know why I got over to that, but probably because school's out and I'm still so relieved. But again, my sponsor. But yeah, so God, I'm sorry. I got totally thrown off on thinking about first grade and how like I've graduated. She's in Spanish and I don't speak Spanish. So it's like when she graduated, I graduated too. So we're learning Spanish together and I'm so happy. I cannot wait for them to go back to school. But anyway, so, you know, and those things that I was given that I had no idea, you know, the getting a car, you know, and wasn't grateful ever for any, wasn't grateful for my education. I got an incredible education. You know, I grew up going to like, you know, operas and plays and, you know, we'd go on these trips and we'd always visit the historical site and my parents would, you know, they sent me to Europe a couple of times and I just wasn't grateful for any of it. And I didn't know how to be grateful. You know, I'm an alcoholic. Before I ever, you know, had a, you know, drop of alcohol in my body, I believe that, you know, I was just self-centered in the extreme. I was fearful. I didn't know that until I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, until I had done a little work. I had no idea, you know. I just, you know, I can say that I was shy. I resented my parents for making me look different than all the white kids that I went to school with, you know, and I didn't know that either until I had been sober for a little while, you know, that I kind of had this deep-seated resentment. And nothing was wrong, you know, not absolutely nothing was wrong on paper, you know, everything, it was inside, you know, and I just had no clue. And I remember, like, as an adult, kind of learning about my parents and their relationship. You know, my parents are mixed race, and it was, I had no idea, like, the courage that it took for them to be together, you know, and to go against both their families. And I never wanted to know. I never cared. I never respected it. You know, all I was, you know, this like shitty kid, you know, but I had no idea. You know, and so my first drink was my first drunk. And that's what I always, you know, that's what was going on inside of me before I ever took the first drink. It was just this like running kind of tape of like, of, you know, self-consciousness, you know, like, am I okay? Is this okay? Am I okay? Am I okay? Am I okay? You know, and it would never stop. Am I, what are they looking at? Are they looking at me? Is what I'm wearing okay? Is my answer okay? Is this okay? Did I say the right thing? It was exhausting. And so my first drink was my first drunk. I was in the Valley at this point. I was 14 years old. It was my first homecoming dance, my first date with a boy ever. And we went to a park and drank vodka and orange juice. And I made out with my date and puked and blacked out and, you know, missed the whole dance. And that's pretty much my whole entire, you know, experience of drinking. Was I was a, you know, puking, blackout, makeout drunk. I never, ever drank appropriately. You know, I remember being new and hearing people talk about that invisible line, you know, and crossing over it. And I believe I was over it with my first drink. Not when I first, you know, read the book or heard the book. At some point when I was ready, you know, I think to hear the message, I could identify with the real alcoholic, you know, in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That paragraph, that Jekyll and Hyde paragraph is me, you know, and you know, every time I drank, you know, I had that personality change. You know, it became disgustingly and dangerously antisocial. And every time I drank, absurd, incredible, tragic things happened. It was never good. You know, it wasn't good for me. And it certainly wasn't good for anybody that, you know, had the misfortune of being around me, you know, and I can look back and see that, you know, how many times I got very lucky, you know, and how I had good friends, you know, because we would go out. And I, you know, wouldn't have any thought about, you know, they'd yank me out of, you know, I'd be getting in, they'd look for me, where's Amy? And I'd be like getting into a van full of like, you know, six, you know, guys that were like 20 years older than us, because we were like 16 with our fake IDs in Hollywood, you know, and they'd yank me out and I'd try to, you know, get out of moving cars and I'd try to drive my car and I'm so grateful, you know, for those friends, you know, and was I able to like be a good friend back? Never. You know, I'd say, you know, they'd try to have a designated, you know, driver and it would be my turn and I would drink, you know, I would drink sneakily, you know, and then I wouldn't handle it. And it's like, I just had no idea until I had been sober a little while in Alcoholics Anonymous. I couldn't, not only did there was no concept of others and there was just no, I couldn't, my world wasn't big enough, you know, it wasn't even an idea, you know, it didn't even exist. The concept that there were other people, you know, that my actions could affect other people, you know? And so because I drank the way I drank, I couldn't drink for very long. You know, I'm one of those people that, you know, maybe I didn't have the physical effects, you know, that alcohol brings, you know, but I went real crazy real fast, you know, and my behaviors were not acceptable. You know, when I drank, I hurt people, you know, physically and emotionally. And I very quickly, you know, and I couldn't be a functioning person, you know, so I was thinking, I was in a meeting the other day and somebody was sharing and it reminded me of like the 12 and 12 where it talks about how alcohol is like the rapacious creditor, you know? And I thought about that because it's like, it gave me what it gave me at first, you know, which was that sense of ease and comfort, you know, which is all I ever, it made the tape stop, you know, and I didn't care. I didn't care. I didn't need you to tell me I was okay. Like I felt okay. You know, that's what alcohol gave me, you know, and that's why I continued to drink and my behaviors were so bad and I wreaked so much havoc, you know, when I drank that things started to pile up and then alcohol became kind of the suppressant, you know, so that I wouldn't have to feel, you know, the feelings that came from, you know, the things I was doing, you know, the shame I was accumulating and the disgust that I was, you know, like, starting to feel and the relationships that I was destroying, you know, and I wasn't able to have a job, you know, and I was just like slowly becoming like a bottom feeder, you know, when I had so much going for me at the beginning, you know, and that's that rapacious creditor, you know, it gave me that relief, but then it slowly, you know, started to scrape away everything that was meaningful, you know, or that could have been meaningful in life, you know, and I just had no idea that that's what was happening. And so what happened, thank God, is, you know, and my parents had tried to help me. So I had, you know, in order to survive, you know, because I couldn't work, I couldn't support myself. I needed relationships, you know, I needed to be in relationships with people who would give me a place to live and give me rides and buy me alcohol and food, which was secondary to alcohol, you know? And I was so crazy and I was not a good girlfriend and I was not a good friend, you know, when I was drinking that, you know, those relationships didn't last very long, you know, and the further I progressed into my alcoholism, the shorter and shorter they got because my crazy started to reveal itself, you know, fairly quickly, you know? And I remember how it felt like, I'll never forget that feeling when I could feel that guy pulling away, you know, because that fear would take hold of like, because it wasn't just, you know, it wasn't the guy, you know, probably didn't care about the guy, but it's like, that was my lifeline. That was my survival. You know, where am I going to live? You know, how am I going to drink? How am I going to drink? You know, and, it was hard to live that way. And, my parents, you know, were the last ones, you know, and, they started making me go to rehabs, you know, so I was 24 years old when I went to my first rehab and it was a 28-day program in Palm Desert. And it's not that it wasn't a good program. I'm sure it was, it didn't work for me because I didn't want to stop drinking. You know, I was there because my parents said that I couldn't live at their house unless I stopped drinking. And, they spent a whole lot of money to send me there. They showed up for the family weekend. They participated, you know, they were trying. I wasn't, you know, I was just there to basically like I fraternized, you know, for 28 days. I ate frozen yogurt and I played ping pong and I fraternized, you know, and then I left there with a, you know, $40,000 big book on my parents' dime. And I drank 4 days later, you know, and I dragged them through some more, you know, pain and suffering, you know, and the type of, you know, pain and suffering that I put on my parents was, you know, I remember like, you know, thing, and I'm grateful for the memories, you know, I'm grateful that I don't forget, you know, especially when I have the honor and privilege of being of service to them, you know, today. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous gives me. You know, those are those living amends that I get to suit up and show up for my parents, you know, if or when they need help, not often, you know, they're still like more often than not helping me, you know, I'm 45 years old and my mom's like, I'm going to Costco, what do you need, you know? And I don't care, I tell her, I'm like, I need Diet Coke and, you know, whatever. It's not too much, you know, but you know, 18 years later in sobriety, it's like, I pay my own rent, you know, I pay for my car. I'm self-supporting enough, you know? Whereas when I got here, it's like my parents are paying for, you know, they're hemorrhaging money for rehabs, you know, they're paying off my fraud charges, you know, because I stole their checks and wrote bad checks, you know, and then had the gall to, you know, be offended when they like called me on it, you know, like, hey, you're stealing from us. And it's like, how dare you? You know, I remember my dad being, we're not going to press charges against you. And I'm like, how dare you? How dare you even think about pressing charges? I'm your daughter, you know? And I just, I never want to forget who I was, you know, before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, because then I won't appreciate like, the grace, you know, that I've been given to become the person that I get to be today. You know, I'm really like weepy today. I'm so sorry. I was prepared though. I have some tissues. So, you know, and I remember, you know, being in the hallway of my parents' house, you know, this is after that 28-day program, and holding a razor to my arm, because, you know, that's another thing I like to do. I used to, like, you know, I used to bang my, I hated myself, you know, I used to bang my head on the door and cut myself. And, you know, I remember holding a razor to my arm and my parents at the end of their end of the hallway, just like holding them hostage, you know, and telling them that I hated myself and that it was because of them, you know. And, you know, I'm a parent, I get to be a parent today. And my kids are still young, but when when my daughter was like, I don't know, 3 or 4, you know, they say, you know, she would say things if I told her like, no, you can't eat candy for breakfast, you know, I want a new mommy, I don't like you, you know. And it's like, I know, you know, not to take that personally and that she's 4 years old, but it still kind of hurt, you know. And it made me think of like me, this like grown ass woman, you know, like telling my parents, you know, I hate myself, it's because of you, you know? And so, you know, I hit another bottom, and, you know, my bottoms, what they look like are, you know, getting my stomach pumped in the ER. So, cause I used to like to, you know, combine my alcohol with high powered sedatives, and I didn't care what they were or where they came from. So, I mean, I used to take my dog's pills, you know, and, I remember this one time, there was, so I used to take my dog's epilepsy pills, you know, and I drink and then I just kind of roam, you know, the, you know, neighborhood or whatever. And then one day there, she had these other pills and I took those two and my throat swelled up and I had to go to the ER because I almost died. And I remember going back, and this is that peculiar mental twist, you know, that they talk about in the book, I think, which is a nice way to say it. But I remember going down and writing down the name of those pills so that I wouldn't take them again. And I guarantee you, if there was like another bottle of pills with my dog's name and it didn't match what I wrote down, I would have taken that too. You know, I did my undergrad in UC Santa Cruz, and I used to find stuff, you know, like in the street, and I would smoke it, you know, like, I didn't care. And so, yeah, I was at a meeting once, and this girl said, you know, like, she would wake up behind dumpsters and, you know, it would be normal. And like, she just didn't see anything wrong with it. And I was like, yeah, I used to get my stomach pumped. You know, and I didn't see anything wrong with it. You know, I was like, oh, I just, you know, too much of that, you know? And the last time I got my stomach pump was at the hospital that my mother worked at. You know, she worked in microbiology and, you know, with people she knew, you know, asking her, and how humiliating for her, you know? But thank God, you know, that was the last place I got my stomach pumped at. So, you know, I had a couple of, you know, times where I would take pills and I was like, if I die, I die. I don't care, you know. But what happened was, you know, after one of those stomach pumpings, my parents sent me to a 90-day program in Simi Valley. And, you know, I just complied. I was good at complying. I got through 90 days. I mean, all I did was, you know, fraternize. I had like 3 boyfriends in 90 days. And, you know, some of them already had girlfriends and fiancés, because I didn't have, you know, again, no concept of other, no principles before Alcoholics Anonymous. I just knew I needed what I needed, you know, and I needed validation and I needed rides and I needed money, you know, and I didn't think of how any of me meeting my needs would affect any other people, you know. And I was living in Simi Valley when I conceded to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic, because I always, you know, knew I was an alcoholic. I knew I couldn't stop drinking, you know. I knew my life was unmanageable. I knew that a long time before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, but I didn't care. I was going to drink no matter what. No matter what the cost, even if the cost was my life, you know? And, when I was in Simi Valley, I was, you know, living off the good graces of the people in AA there and, you know, renting rooms and, you know, going through their medicine cabinets and drinking their scope, you know, because it was all I could get my hands on. Doing little jobs that people would let me have it, and going to meetings, you know, and lying and stealing and doing the things that I did, you know, and then one day, you know, alcohol stopped covering up all those icky feelings, you know, four horsemen, the despair and the terror and the bewilderment. And I couldn't drink enough to not feel those things anymore, you know? I love the part in, it's in A Vision for You, I think, where it talks about the jumping off place. And it says, one day man won't be able to imagine life with or without alcohol. Then he will know loneliness such as few do. He'll be at the jumping off place of Wishbone. That's exactly what happened to me, is alcohol wasn't working for me anymore. All I felt was shame and disgust. And I knew that I couldn't. You know, it was like, I know I'm an alcoholic and that means I can't drink, you know? But I didn't want to live in a world where I couldn't drink, you know? And it's not like I wasn't informed about Alcoholics Anonymous, because I had been being dragged and forced to, you know, going to meetings, you know, for several years. And I wasn't one of those people that didn't believe that people were getting sober and becoming happy, joyous, and free and having promises and all that stuff. I didn't want it. I didn't care. You know, I didn't want to live in a world where I couldn't drink, you know? So when the time came, and I conceded to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic, I made a very conscious choice. You know, I love the little bits of the book always pop up. It's like those two roads, you know, we can go on to the bitter end, you know, blotting out our, you know, whatever, existence, you know, like, or we can accept, you know, spiritual help, you know? And I knew that those were the two roads. And I very consciously like decided I didn't want the spiritual help. You know, I didn't want Alcoholics Anonymous, and I wasn't getting to the bitter end fast enough. So, I made a decision, and I was living in Simi Valley at the time. I was dating my sponsor's stepson, and I was 27 and he was 19. And I was like two bottles of wine into the night, and he dumped me. He was like, "I love you, but you're crazy." And that's how all my relationships used to end. Like, "I love you, but you're crazy." And when my husband and I got together, because my husband, who's also a really good speaker, you need them, anyone, David. He's like Mr. Friendly, and you know, he's like friends with every girl he's ever dated since he was like 9 years old on Facebook and stuff. And I told him like, "Oh, you don't have to worry about that with me. Like, I crazied everybody away. Nobody's gonna look for me." And like to this day, like, no one's ever looked for me. There was one guy at my high school reunion that was like, "Oh, I had a crush on you." And I was like, "You dodged a bullet, you know?" And that's okay, you know, because I remember feeling bad, like, really? Nobody's looking for me? But whatever. It is what it's supposed to be. So this guy dumped me, this 19-year-old. And I remember like doing that thing like, "Oh, you know, let me out of the car right now." And he did. And I was on a dirt road in Simi Valley, and I had $60 in my pocket and a plan. You know, my parents who lived in Woodland Hills. I always forget when I'm not in California, I say like all these cities, and people are probably like, you know, whatever. I don't know. See me valley in Woodland Hills. It's like, yeah, I don't know, like 40 minutes with traffic. Anyway, so I'm on a dirt road in Simi Valley. I knew my parents were out of town on vacation. And I knew that, you know, my dog's pills were in the cabinet at their house. So I called a cab. I got a ride to my parents' house. I had to break into their house because I was no longer welcome there at that point. I went in through the dog door. I remember getting stuck because I remember thinking, how dare they? You know, how dare they make me break into my own house like a dog, you know? And I always, you know, I'm welcome in my parents' house as a result of, you know, staying sober and Alcoholics Anonymous. And the dog door's still there, you know, it's boarded up, but it's tiny, you know? And I always think of willing to go to any lengths when I see it, because I don't know how I got my body, like, you know, in there, but I did. And I got to those pills and I went down to the den. And, you know, I was stressed, like I had a good plan. I took almost all the pills that were in the bottle. And I remember leaving like 7 for the dog. And I wrote some note in the book I was reading, and I fully expected never to wake up again, you know, and God was working in my life, a long time before I acknowledged him or allowed him to, because my brother, who was, you know, an adult and lived, you know, in his own apartment, was there at the house that night, and he called 911, and I woke up a couple of days later in ICU. And I remember my first thought when I opened my eyes was, F you, God, you know. And I didn't have a relationship with God before Alcoholics Anonymous. I believed in God because I was raised a certain way. But I didn't have a relationship. You know, we parted ways. I dropped out of confirmation when I was 15. And it was like, there's me, you know, God and his people and me and smart people. And, you know, that's the way it's going to be. And I love in We Agnostics where it says, you know, deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. Because when I opened my eyes and realized I wasn't dead, my first thought was, F you, God, you know, and I knew that it was God's fault, you know, and that was my last kind of punishment, you know, I have to live, you know? And, but that's what had to happen for me to stop fighting, you know, or to, you know, sit on my hands or whatever it was, to be surrendered enough, to start, the program, you know, doing AA, you know, and after I, you know, was medically cleared, they kicked me up to the 6th floor of the hospital, which was the psych ward. I remember going to the payphone, calling my dad, saying, you know, these people are crazy, you need to come get me. And all I heard was click, you know, and a voice in my head, which today I know was God, because it never would have come from me, said, you know, you made your bed, now you lie in it, you did this. And I stayed there on the 6th floor at All of You Hospital, you know, there was this social worker there, and I was always like annoyed because he wanted to talk to me all the time. I was like, why did he want to talk to me? He was trying to help me, he was trying to place me, my parents were done. And one day he said, I have a couple rehabs for you. One's in Santa Monica and one's in Sylmar. And the hospital I was in was in Sylmar, but I wanted to go to Santa Monica, you know. I was like, oh, there's, you know, I like the beach and I like surfers and, you know, I like the Broadway deli, and just totally, you know, disconnected from reality. I had like no money and no insurance, you know. I was at All of You Hospital, and I'm thinking about, you know, shopping on the promenade and, you know, stuff like that. But God was working in my life again before I acknowledged him or allowed him to, because the place in Santa Monica didn't have a bed that day, but this place in Sylmar did. And it's where I ended up going. It was a 6-month all women's recovery home in Sylmar, and it's where my life changed. And I remember getting to the gate the day I was released from that hospital, and, you know, this woman running up to the gate, like, hi, I'm your big sister, we're gonna love you till you love yourself. And I was just like, whatever, you know, like, I'll never forget how it felt. You know, I just felt like taking those pills was like my last idea, that I couldn't die. I tried to die, I couldn't die. God overrode me. And that my penance was to, you know, live in this place now. And this lady's my big sister. And, you know, we're going to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, and thank God for that. you know, and I went to this place and thank God for those people, you know, because they carried the message of Alcoholics Anonymous in the way that I needed to hear it. You know, they weren't very nice. You know, I was like, these people are so rude, you know, but what they were doing was they were caring enough about me and my life to tell me the truth about myself, you know, and I'm grateful. I'm grateful for the people, you know, who cared enough to tell me the truth. And I'm grateful for the process of the steps. You know, I love my experience, you know, it's in that book, but somewhere at the end of one of those chapters, it talks about swallowing chunks of truth about yourself. And the going through the steps, you know, has changed my life. The inventory has, I mean, not just connecting with a power greater than me and learning how to rely on that power to get me through, you know, life, which has been, you know, has had its ups and downs, which guess what, like, that's what life is. And I had no idea before I got here, you know, I think back and it's like, no wonder I couldn't live. You know, I had no idea that I couldn't show up and be like, hi, I'm Amy, take care of me, you know, or that I should ever have to feel bad, you know, or, you know, I didn't have that. I didn't have the understanding. And I certainly didn't have the ability, you know, to feel those feelings. Those feelings were going to kill me, you know, and because I've done the work, you know, and the steps and try to live inside the steps, you know, try to apply these principles to the best of my ability. It's like, I learned how to swallow those chunks of truth when I took that inventory, you know, and it doesn't always feel good. And I'm grateful for those people who at the beginning, before I got to that inventory, before anything, you know, when I just showed up, like I didn't die, you know, that's why I'm here. I remember walking in, I've had the same home group for 18 years. These people have seen me when I came in, you know, they've seen me, you know, at my best, at my worst, you know, with like boyfriends and then marrying and then pregnant. And, you know, I had a baby shower with like 100 AA people, you know, we didn't have to buy diapers for like a year. It was amazing, you know, and I showed up just, you know, they wanted to hug me and they wanted to love me and they wanted me to get this gift that they have. And I was just like, I'm here because I'm not dead. You know, that's all. And I'm so grateful. I'm grateful for my first sponsor, you know, she was the first person I ever trusted in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that same lady, you know, that was my big sister, was like, why didn't you ask her to be your sponsor? And I was like, okay, you know, and she was, my sponsor was like, oh yeah, I'll be your sponsor. My memory of when I was new in AA is that everyone was just happy, you know, and I love that I get to be that person now. And I'm always, when there are new girls, I'm always like attracted to the girl that's like in the corner, like rolling her eyes, you know, and then I get to be like the happy, shiny person. Oh, welcome to AA, you know, that's what happened. But, you know, I thought she was cool. I thought my sponsor was cool, you know, and she, you know, she and the people that ran that house, you know, they carried the message to me. And my first sponsor was really big on foundation, you know, and she said, she told me the story of the three little pigs. And she said, you know, you could build your house with straw, you can build it with sticks, or you can build it with bricks, you know, because one day the big bad wolf will come and blow your house down. And you know, through nothing that I did was a decision that came from me. You know, I completed that program, it was 6 months. They asked me to go on staff. I didn't want to go on staff. I was like the resident in the house that was like, the staff are such losers, like they don't even get paid, you know. And they saved my life by asking me to go on staff, you know, because if I would have left that house at 6 months of sobriety, like I didn't have any tools. I didn't, you know, I was still so self-centered, you know, and so about me and what I could get, you know, and I hadn't a clue about giving yet, you know, and I got to go on staff and learn how to be of maximum service, you know, and learn how to be, you know, learn how to start to practice that honesty, you know, because I wasn't. And I went on staff for 9 months and then I went to their sober living for a year. And I didn't want to do that either because you had to sign in and out. You had to still have a meeting slip that you got signed at your meetings and you had to go be of service for a certain number of hours at the house. And, And I did that too, you know, because I just didn't have any other options, you know? And the whole time I was at Sober Living, laying those bricks and getting those commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous and taking the bus, you know, and being of service. And I saw these girls completing the program and going out into the world and, you know, getting boyfriends and having babies and getting jobs and going shopping. And I would complain to my sponsor and I'd be all bitter, like, you know, I'm taking the bus and going to my commitments and, you know, those pigs are having fun. You know, and she told me, what kind of sobriety do you want, Amy? And I don't want good sobriety, you know? So I just kept plugging along and thank God for good sponsorship, you know, because 18 years later, some of those women are in and some are out. And I've seen quite a few of them lose those children, you know, because they didn't stay sober. Some of them are in jail and quite a few of them are dead, you know, and they were young women. You know, and thank God for that sponsorship. Thank God. The whole time I was laying those bricks while I was in Sober Living, I was in acceptance, but, you know, like really kind of like really felt like God was withholding from me, you know, and I was accepting of it because I had been so bad. You know, that I felt like, well, I don't get these things, you know, because I was so bad. But I was committed to Alcoholics Anonymous and I was committed to staying sober, you know. And what I learned, you know, in hindsight, you know, and you know, you just don't pick up the drink and then maybe God shows you, you know, why at some point later on is that, you know, I needed to learn how to be sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had to do that work in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then God would give me those things that I wanted in his time, you know, and thank God I didn't have babies when I wanted to, you know, I couldn't, it's hard for me now. You know, sometimes I'm like, I can't believe I'm 18 years sober and I'm yelling at my kid and I, you know, and that's the work I've done with my sponsor. It's like, I call her and I'm ashamed. You know, it's like, I don't want to be this way with my kid. I don't want to bang on the desk, you know, but I get so frustrated and it's like, I can't believe like I act like this at 18 years sober, but can you imagine, you know, and God's plan is always the best, you know, when my husband and I, we had been married less than a year and we started to try to have kids. And I remember like it wasn't happening, you know, and it took over a year. And I remember going through all those stages of like, I'd get mad, you know, I'd look at the, you know, the test and it wouldn't, you know, it'd be negative and I'd be like dejected or sad or disappointed. And then I started to get angry and be like, well, any freaking person can get pregnant. Why not me? You know? And then I moved into acceptance. And then, you know, and then then I was like, well, maybe we won't have kids. We'll just have like 4 dogs. And then it happened, you know? And I remember when that baby came home, like that, you know, my husband and I fought so much, like we fought over everything. And I was like, how do people stay married? You know, how does this happen? Plus I had some, like, I think postpartum psychosis, but thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous too. I wasn't going to meetings. It's the only time in my sobriety I went like a month without going to meetings, but I was so plugged into the fellowship that the women came to my house, you know, and they brought me food and they brought meetings to me. And I really needed it at that time, you know? And I knew like that it was God's time, you know, like God knew that my husband and I needed that time to build the foundation of our marriage before this kid came in and like, you know, changed everything, you know, and it's stuff like that. If I stay sober and I can look back, you know, when I feel disappointed, I've been unemployed twice in Alcoholics Anonymous. Once I was laid off for, you know, whatever. And then the second time, like my, you know, I was working in Malibu and the freaking place burned down in the fire, you know, and then I finally landed. I've had very bad experiences in employment. I've gotten 2 master's degrees in sobriety and I've had very, you know, bad bordering on traumatic relationships with employers. And being unemployed was very scary. But the second time it happened, I knew what to do. You know, and I ended up at a place that I work at now that I really love, you know, for the first time in my whole life, you know, and I don't make a lot of money, which is what I thought I wanted when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. But through those experiences, those seemingly bad experiences at other places, I know what I want now, you know, and I'm happy where I am, and I'm not looking for more, you know, than what I've given. My great understanding, you know, what God has allowed me, not what God has, you know, put in my path, you know, like challenges or whatever. Really, it's this, you know, what God has allowed me to get through by relying on the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and that mighty God that I found here. You know, it started little. The more I walk through, the more I rely on him, the stronger my faith, you know? And I really believe that God hasn't brought me this far to drop me, you know? And I understand through pain, painful lessons, ego smashing, all that stuff that comes as a result of living and growing in this program, that I'm lucky, you know, that I don't deserve what I have, you know? And so I will continue to show up and, you know, try to do my part. You know, God gives me this beautiful gift. I you know, I complain, you know, sometimes about, like, oh, you know, being a mom and all this stuff, and oh my God, you know, I can't believe I get to be these kids' mom, you know, who I was, you know, that they don't ever have to know what I was like, you know, that I get to have a loving and healthy and honest relationship with my husband, who is also a great dad, but a great AA, you know. He loves Alcoholics Anonymous, and we get to share that, you know. It's part of our life, you know. We got sober in Hawaii, you know, and then we went back for our 10-year, or we got married in Hawaii. We went back for our 10-year reunion. It's because we have friends, you know, who are like, we have a timeshare, you can stay there. You know, and it's because we're sober. It's because we've learned how to be sober and give back, you know, and I'm just so grateful, you know, for God's plan. If there's one thing that I've learned, you know, it's that God's plans are always better than mine. You know, I wanted to be dead at 27, you know, I'm 45. I have two children who are like the joy and this at the same time the bane of my existence, you know. I get to, like, you know, like the Lakers won a championship last year, like this stuff like that, and it's like, oh, I would have missed that. I remember when the sixth season of Game of Thrones aired, I was like at the end of my bed, like, I can't believe I'm trying to kill myself. Like there is so much joy. I am so willing to feel those feelings if it means growing, you know, and changing and becoming better in Alcoholics Anonymous, to experience the joy that I've experienced, you know. It's so worth it. So thank you so much for listening to me, lover.
Thank you so much, Amy. That was wonderful. Everybody has the ability to unmute and say thank you.
Thank you.
Amy, that was awesome.
Amy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Amy. That was awesome.
Thank you, ma'am, very much. Thank you,
Amy.
So powerful.
Thank you, Amy.
Beautiful.
Lots of gratitude.
All right, let's give Amy a break. We'll do a little bit of business here. The user questions is Larry. So please, the questions that we ask are going to be the questions that you send in. So I don't have a list of stuff in the can just waiting. So please send your questions in. Let's see. I got some links going in the chat. Kind of feels seventh tradition-y. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any announcements for the good of AA? I think me and Ebony are both out of bullets. Anybody else?
I do have one. Hey guys, I'm an alcoholic. My name is Ebony.
Hey, Ebony.
Next weekend, AA 101 will not be meeting in person. Just putting that message out there. AA 101 will only be Zoom just for next weekend. There's an event going on at the Fred Hewitt Center on the 4th. So wanted to put that out there. Thanks.
Thank you. And in the spirit of putting things out there, no, I can't do that until tomorrow. Never mind. Scratch that. Anybody else? Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please stick around. You may have come in alone, but you do not have to leave that way. Or if you're shy, feel free to send an email to info@simpleactions.net. All right, let's see. All right, we got a couple of questions. Come on, guys. Come on, bring them. Amy, you got me crying through the whole thing. I'm all confuddled and confused and grateful. And thank you so much. The first question that came in, it says, a couple of times you mentioned being compliant. What is the difference between compliance and recovery?
Good question. So when I say compliant is I follow the rules. It's weird. I heard a speaker once say that, like, I identified with, like, I love punk rock. I love that attitude, you know, of like F you and all that stuff, but that's not who I was. You know, I was a rule follower, you know, I was a good private school, you know, girl, and I didn't want to get in trouble. And so I complied. I said what I needed to say. I didn't believe it, you know, because I wasn't there yet. I, like I said, needed to go to the gates of insanity and death before I got there, you know, but I complied because I, you know, didn't want to get kicked out, you know, and didn't want to have nowhere to go. And so I just, I follow the rules, you know. So you go here, you know, when we tell you to do it, you write this essay or whatever, you show up at this group, you share or whatever. And it's like, I followed the rules. I did what I needed to do, but I didn't have, when I was graduated from that place, I didn't have the desire or, you know, the motivation or, you know, the skills to actually go and like be sober and stay sober. I went right back to what I knew, which was, you know, selfish, you know, fear. So I hope that.
Thank you. My ears pricked up when you used the phrase mighty God. What do you mean when you say a mighty God?
Oh, so I love that you asked that. So, my home group is the Pacoima group. And I've gotten the incredible grace to get sober with a bunch of old timers. You know, I had one guy who was like my spiritual advisor. He knew everything, you know, my sponsor knew about me. I learned so much from him. I have his art. He died a few years ago, right before he was going to turn 50 years sober. Anyway, one of my other old timers, his name is Louis. He took his 50 year cake at our home group meeting this morning. And he always, so, you know, I've I've grown up with these guys. These guys are like my teachers. You know, I've always been a good student. You know, I love school. I hate working. I hate jobs. I love school. If I could go to school forever and get a million degrees, I would. I love learning, reading, studying. My big book looks like a textbook, you know, and so I kind of showed up to AA the same way with these old timers. And Louie always talked about a mighty God, you know, he has a mighty God. And it's just something that I kind of internalized and that I believe, you know, like I've come to believe in a mighty God, you know, a God. And you know, through the, I read the meditation books and stuff, and there's just phrases and stuff that you read so many times, they just get in there, you know. And one thing that I always loved reading, and it's phrased differently in different places, though, is just that, you know, that God has all the power I'm ever going to need, you know, and that my old timer, Walt, who passed away, like he used to tell me about staying in the now and connecting to the source. He called God the source, you know, and he said the only time, you know, the now is the only time that you're going to connect to the source. And I would think of it as kind of like a plugging in, you know, for electricity, but like a, you know, just a line from me to God. And that God couldn't help me in the past. You know, if I was in the past, you know, regretting something, or if I was in the future stressing about something, that God wouldn't be there to help me, that God could only help me right now, you know, and I always plug into the source. So I got that from Walt, and that mighty God, that concept, you know, that power, you know, like I love the comfort that I get with the idea that if I can connect to God, that's all the power I'm going to need, you know, to get through whatever it is that's happening to me right now, you know.
Thank you. I always want to editorialize the questions and rephrase them, you know, but I'm just going to read what's on the page. How has your sponsorship style influenced your sponsorship style?
Oh, so I've had two sponsors. My first sponsor I had till I was 14 years sober, and then she moved away and kind of like got away from Alcoholics Anonymous. And there came a time, of course, like it took me like 2 years from the idea of like, I think I need a new sponsor to actually taking the action of getting a new sponsor. But my first sponsor, you know, I take sponsees through the steps exactly the way she took me through the steps. Like the same thing when I went through step two, she had me write a list of, you know, two columns, like the attributes of the God I came in with, and then the attributes of my perfect God. Like, what would my perfect God look like, you know? And I remember, because I was so, you know, kind of steeped in that religion that I grew up with, that I remember, like, on my perfect God column, I wrote, like, sense of humor first, I think. And then, you know, forgiveness, and started writing these things. And I remember telling her, like, you know, the real God is going to get mad, you know, because like, it was so, you know, like I was, you know, and she said, just start praying to that God, you know, the God that I made up, you know, and, you know, I got there, you know, through those simple actions. And I've done that with the girls that I sponsor, and I do exactly the columns, you know, as they're laid out in how it works, the same way my sponsor did with me, you know. And and so I think like my sponsorship style is kind of like her. My sponsor that I have now is perfect for where I was at in my sobriety then, and continuing, you know. There's never been a time where I thought, like, you know, where I didn't know that God led me to Carla Rao, you know? And she, she's, the things that are important to her, I get to kind of, because my first sponsor really wasn't into like AA history, and Carla thinks that it's important, you know, for me to know AA history. And so I will get to, like, you know, once, you know, cause I have sponsees that are, you know, I'm not taking through the steps actively anymore. And so I haven't yet. And Carla is also super big. My first sponsor, oh my God. I remember she was very with like sponsorship when girls asked me to sponsor them. I remember I was pregnant with my second kid and I was like, I don't know if I'll have the time. She's like, then don't sponsor them. You know, like if you know, you think you'd be cheating them out of the experience. And but that was just me. And Carla really pushes me to again, like, and I'm grateful to have a sponsor who, because I don't want to be that person that's like, I'm 18 years sober. Like I've done this, you know, like God put her in my life for a reason to push me out of my discomfort and out of that selfishness that's still, you know, so, you know, a part of me, you know, to say yes when I don't want to, you know. Carla sponsors tons of women, you know, and I will be selfish with my time. And then I'll use my kids, you know, I'll blame it on my kids, you know? So I know, like, and I say yes. And that's something that, you know, again, like with Carla, it's like the things that she's teaching me are important. I get to kind of say are important to the girls that I sponsor, but I still take them through the steps the way I was taken through the steps. Cause I feel like that's the only way it worked well for me. And that's the only way I know how to do it.
Right. So we have another sponsorship segue question here. I sometimes disagree with my sponsor's suggestions and start asking everyone else in AA for advice. Advice is in air quotes, or it's in actual quotes actually on the page. I just did air quotes. I start asking everyone else in AA for advice until I hear what I want to hear. Any suggestions how to break this habit?
Oh God. I mean, I feel like just the fact that you use the quotes, it's like, you know, like you're not doing the right, you know, thing, you know what you're doing, you know? So it really, I mean, I, you know, your sponsor, no one's going to break it for you. You know, I feel like it's your decision, you know, do I want to, and, you know, and I don't know, sometimes too, I remember, oh my gosh, again, it's like, I went through like 3 weeks without calling my sponsor, without calling Carla. And I didn't think it was a big deal. And I remember when I called her and she's like, you know, if you know, she just said like, I need to know if I'm sponsoring you, I need to know that I'm sponsoring you. And, you know, if you want to be friends, that's great. We could totally be friends. And it totally took me, I was taken aback, you know, cause I was like, oh my God, you know, like, and so ever since then, like I call her every week, you know, and I take pride in it. It's like, my sponsor knows what's going on with me. My sponsor knows that she is my sponsor, you know, and I'm giving to it, you know? So I don't know if, you know, but at the same time too, it's like, I know what Carla's going to say, you know? So sometimes there are some things, and they're not big, huge things, but there are some, you know, it's like, I know if somebody like put in the, you know, chat, I spoke at a meeting once and someone put in the chat about, you know, will I sponsor them? And I pretended like I didn't see it because there were lots of messages and like, I knew that was wrong, you know? And there are certain things that it's like, I know Carla's going to tell me to say yes, you know? So then it becomes, you know, my decision, you know, like, and sometimes, you know, I'm not going to put it out there like I'm perfect. Sometimes like I choose, you know, and I know that Carla would have me do the opposite of what I've chosen, you know, and I know that probably it's selfish and I have to change that, you know? So I don't know, maybe I pray for the willingness to, be, you know, or I don't know if it's not the right sponsor, you know, but yeah, we don't, I had, you know, my spiritual advisor, I had my sponsor, and I have a good AA friend, you know, who I call. And, you know, those are, I never get conflicting advice, you know, and I always go to my sponsor first. And I respect her sobriety. I respect her enough not to lie to her. I'm grateful for the time that she gives me and for her sharing that with me. So I'm as honest as I can be. And I try to hold up my part of our relationship, you know, because I want to stay sober. I don't want to run the show, you know, and also I've never been somebody that really like I don't want to say had a lot of friends in AA, but it's like I had my sponsor and I had my spiritual advisor, and that's who knew everything about me. And I shared it in a general way, you know, with other people, or if someone asked me to sponsor them, or if someone asked me specifically for advice. I didn't go to a lot of people because I wasn't like, you know, that, you know, I didn't trust a lot of people, you know? So it's like, if you know you're looking for what you want to hear, then it's like, you're just deciding I'm going to do what I want to do, or I'm going to, you know, be uncomfortable or in fear or whatever, you know, and listen to my sponsor. So, and I don't know, maybe you need a new sponsor. I don't know the exact, you know, situation, but I think the quotes show that you already know the answer.
Thank you. Would you share a little bit of experience about inventory? Maybe that first one, or maybe the last one. I don't know, but the importance of inventory.
Oh God. My education is in, you know, psychology and mental health and stuff like that. And so I really like view the inventory, the fourth and fifth step, as, you know, that's the therapeutic, that's the therapy, you know, that's the, at least for me, the what changed everything, you know. My first inventory, I remember I had some ticky-tack things on there, but I put everything down. I put down those secrets that I was going to take to the grave. And there was one thing I called the bomb that I thought like made me the most disgusting person on earth. And I remember giving my sponsor a couple of like little ticky-tack ones. And then I dropped the bomb. And I remember her reaction was like, oh, so I know a bunch of women that did that. And then I remember like feeling like I could breathe, like this rock had been taken. And then I just let it all go, you know? And then I, you know, went and did 6 and 7 and I was alone. And I remember saying that 7-step prayer. And it was the first time that I ever felt close to God. And my first inventory, I remember that blank column, you know, and my sponsor, the way she took me through it was with the, you know, using the 7 deadly sins, to encapsulate those defects of character. And so when I was done, she had me read down, you know, all those things that I had put in that empty column, and she, cause she wanted me to see, you know, what are your most glaring character defects, you know, like what are you going to ask God to take from you in the 6th and 7th step? And it was like pride, greed, lust, sloth, you know? and so it was like, jarring, but it was like, oh, you know, that's my problem, you know. And when I became aware of it and those and how they interfered with me living and being in the world, then I could ask God to take it, you know. And my experience is that it does. At 12 years sober, I did another inventory because I wanted to kill myself again, you know, and it was because I was in debt, you know, and that's it. You know, and my sponsor had me do, and I didn't know that, you know, I just like, I wasn't getting, you know, I had this resentment against my husband and I just wanted out. I was working in Malibu. I was driving down the canyon every day. And I had this, you know, because in my sobriety, like suicide is always kind of like, it's like my default setting. You know, so when I'm like overwhelmed or, you know, depressed or whatever, it's like suicide, you know, but it's always been fleeting, you know, and especially since having kids and anchoring myself in Alcoholics Anonymous, it kind of floats through, you know, and if it does stick around, it's like I play the tape through and I have this image of like my mom or my husband, like sitting on the edge of my kid's bed saying like, oh, your mom loved you. She was just really sad, you know, and it's just like, no, you know, suck it up, you know, like just suck it up. But at this point, it wasn't going away. And my thoughts were like, well, my kids feel okay, you know, and I called my sponsor because that's what I've learned how to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And she had me do a fear inventory. And I got down again to those like disgusting, ugly chunks of truth. And I got to see in black and white what was really going on. You know, I was resentful at my husband. I thought it was like over the dishes, you know, and what it was that I was resentful because he didn't make enough money doing his job so that I didn't have to work too, you know, at 12 years sober, right? And when I saw that for what it was, I realized how unfair that was, you know, because he works really hard and he loves what he does, you know, and I'm grateful for that. And I knew what he did before I married him, you know, and I was able to see it for what it was. And I was able to ask God to take it, and our relationship got better and that resentment went away. And then I was able to look at this debt, and I got down to this ugly truth that, like, oh, I'm willing to kill myself and leave my children without a mom because I can't buy stuff, you know, at the stores I like to shop at. And it was gross and I hated it. And I asked God to take it, and he took it too, you know, and the circumstances didn't change. My husband's job didn't change. Our financial situation didn't change. As a result, I went back and got an MBA, you know, because I kind of gained this, like, you know, if I want to live a certain way, I'm responsible. I need to get there on my own, you know, and it helped me to grow. You know, LeBron James was a part, like a little part of that, but that's another story. but those inventories are so, I mean, I don't want to say like one thing is the most important thing, because probably in answering another question, I'll say, oh, that was the most important thing. But those inventories, I mean, they're necessary. I need to look at that. I need to, you know, the book tells me, like, I need to clean out, you know, and that's how I get closer to God. I'll never get to where God is, you know, like whatever rocketed into the fourth dimension. But my purpose is to live and to serve, you know, in this program so that I can get closer to that God, you know, and I do that by looking at all this stuff, you know. I have to find it. My first sponsor was always uncover, discover, discard, you know, and I understand what that means today. It's like, it's there, whether I look at it or not. I have to find it and see how it's ruining my relationships and my ability to live and be in the world. And then my experience is that once I see it, if I want it to be gone and I ask God to take it, he'll take it. That's my experience. That's how I know that this works, that this inventory stuff works, because it's worked.
It's absolutely brilliant, because the next question is, would you be willing to give an example of how step 6 and 7 have worked in your life? But you just did that. And it's very difficult to get there without doing an inventory and a fifth step first, right? Right. Is there anything else in there that before we move on? Do you want to tell the LeBron James story?
So at this dark time when I was in this debt and wanting to die over it, and so I'm a huge basketball fan. I mean, since I was a kid, we used to go to Laker games. Magic Johnson is like my favorite, you know, he's my hero. He's my favorite person like ever. but you know, this is before LeBron was a Laker. But I love LeBron, you know, because I love basketball and I love greatness, you know? And so it was 2016 and the Cavaliers had they were in the finals, they were playing the Warriors, and they were down 3-1. And no team in the history of the NBA, so in 60 something years, no team had ever come back from a 3-1 deficit to win the finals. And LeBron's team did, you know, and he was superhuman in the last game, superhuman. I couldn't believe, you know, what he did and how great it was. And I watched his post-game interview like a million times. And he was saying, well, first he said, like, I don't know why, like, we took the hardest way to get to it, which I identified with, right? But what did you say to your team when you were down, you know, 3-1? And what did you say to them in the locker room? And he said, well, and he also said too, like, I didn't ask God, like, why me? I said, okay, God, you know, let's go, let's do this, right? But then what he said to his team was like, you know, we're going to take it one game at a time, one quarter at a time, you know, one play at a time, one dribble at a time. And like, for some reason, probably because I am who I am, I love basketball, I love LeBron James, and where I was at in that moment, that is what inspired me to apply for this MBA program. You know, that he just sorry. I'm so lame. he gave me the faith, you know, God worked through him, you know, in that moment for me to give me the faith and the courage to do something. I mean, I'm financially dumb, you know, like that's how I got into that debt problem in the first place, you know, to really take the bull by the horns and to do something scary, you know, and he really, he inspired me to do that. And I graduated, I have an MBA and I'm more financially responsible. I don't make six figures, which was, I think maybe like in the back of my mind, but I feel like I really conquered this thing that I wanted to, you know, kill myself over at 12 years sober. Right. So that's LeBron James.
Thank you. Other than the big book, are there other pieces of literature that have helped you in your recovery?
So I love the big book. I love the 12 and 12. I have since day one have read, you know, have had a morning meditation discipline. I mean, through the years, I've probably, you know, it's not been in the morning. I've had to adjust it, but I read the 24-hour day book and the daily reflections. I have favorite passages in both of those. I have like through the years, it's almost like a little diary. I have little doodles and, you know, so it's like I get to go through them and see like, oh, you know, this 2016 or there was one, one of my old timer women, you know, she lost her husband a couple of years ago. And I just the other day in my meditation book, like had a little doodle and the prayer for the day had something to do with like having the courage to walk through difficult, I don't know, something like that. And I had a little heart and it said Fran and Ted, you know, and I know that probably they were going through something, you know, he was sick and that's when it started. And I, you know, I texted it to her and I just, I love, I don't know. It's like my diary of sobriety and I have these favorite passages. And then when, you know, cause you get to them once a year and it's like, oh yay, it's this one, you know? What else? I mean, my sponsor gave me this book, The Importance of the Home Group. I had to read Language of the Heart a long time when I was living at the Sober Living. Oh, my sponsor made me read Humility for Today and Language of the Heart for a whole month, the whole story. You know, and then I think towards the end, I got the point. I was like, oh, I have spiritual pride, you know, like I learned a hard lesson at that time. But I mean, nothing that I, you know, the 12 and 12, the, you know, and then I've been given books. Honestly, I was a GSR for my home group. I never read the books that I was supposed to read, you know, like full disclosure, I've never read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. My if Carla heard me, she, oh my God, she'd give me so many assignments. Like she'd be like, put down your frickin' Stephen King and, you know, read some of this. My spiritual advisor, old timer, gave me a book called Not God, you know, and I think it's the history of Alcoholics Anonymous written by a non-member. You know, and I never read that. So like, maybe that's a bad question for me, but I that big book is my textbook, you know, and I never stopped studying it. And the 12 and 12 I use to take Whitman through the steps, because it expands on what's in that big book. And I love my little meditation books.
Is now being married to another active member in Alcoholics Anonymous, do you and your husband ever work each other's programs or take each other's inventory or give each other advice?
I think we grew out of that, like at the beginning. Yeah, so I mean, at the beginning maybe, but now it's like, oh gosh, what is? I think we've been married, we've been together 15 years, we'll be married 13 years this year. And I mean, the other day, like an example of how we, you know, how it comes into our marriage is that, you know, he wasn't gonna go to one of his regular meetings and he was saying like, oh, the leaders aren't good. And, you know, I don't get anything from that meeting anymore. And then I told him what my sponsor told me when I said that about one of my meetings many years ago, like, I don't get anything out of it. And she told me like, well, Amy, maybe you're supposed to give, you know, like, so I just said the same thing to him. And he was like, and he showed up to the meeting, you know? And I think, you know, at some point, like, we just knew to, you know, like, not get in there, you know? And I love his sponsor, you know? My sponsor, we know at this point, like, that it's me, you know? It's me. I gotta look at my part, you know? And when we did go through something that, like, really, you know, probably the hardest thing we've had to go through, maybe like 6 or 8 years ago, and he got into action, you know, and I called my sponsor and I called my friend, my trusted friend, and I knew, I looked at my part and I knew how to move forward, and he got into action right away and he looked at his part, and I believe that's why we got through that hard thing at that time, you know, because of our sponsors and our willingness to you know, look at our own part.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's just been delightful meeting you, and you've been so generous with your time. Just delightful. I hope it was a pleasant hour and a half for you. Oh. I have one final question for you. Who is going to win the NBA championship this year?
Well, probably the Suns.
Oh, there you have it. There's your answer. All right. Thank you so much. Let's see where we are. Everybody will get the opportunity to unmute after the Lord's Prayer and thank Amy again. And I wonder if Jean Misson, would you read the last three paragraphs on page 164 for us, if I put it up on the screen?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right, John Alcoholic.
John.
A vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of him. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless and keep you until then.
Thank you, John. Thank Amy again. Thank all of you for participating. Larry for wrangling the questions. My beautiful home group members, if you're new and you're in the room, nobody's going to run away. If you need a phone number, please stick around. And if we could, how about we'll circle up virtually and have a moment of silence. Feel free to unmute. Let's just have a confusing version of the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. And forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Ah, thank you, Amy.
Awesome, Amy. Great job.
Amy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Amy.
Thanks, Amy.
Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Amy.
It was great. I love the way you describe that. This, you put words to that selfishness. Just the simple concept of an other was unavailable to me. You know, it was just beautiful. Oh, and my father was a veterinarian, And my father had to fire his firstborn son because his firstborn idiot son had a fondness for, I believe the epileptic dogs get phenobarbital.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. They had to fire me for that shit.
Oh, I love that.
So I just wanted to let you know you're not the only one nipping on the doggy medicine.
I took the dog's meds too.
Yeah, there's always somebody that has done the same thing. You know, when I put my first